hearing doesn't have to limit, that kids are expecting things right away now, and they're not, there's so much protection and worry about harm that, you know,
right.
You know, feel uncomfortable or have harm done to them, that is a lot of protecting, and that, how do you lead kids through this, like, being okay with...
It's probably why I became a mom. I mean, if you ask real kids, you got the wrong guy. But what I would, you know, in just being with people in general, is the more I can be aware of my own fears and my own biases and my own judgments, all that business, and be very conscious of that and see how that is affecting my interpretation of the moment, of the person, and become more and more adept at that, especially like fear for me. Because when I interpret life through fear, you know, fear of harm of them or whatever, then I really don't listen to the situation, right? So to me, that is the only advice I could really advise, give, is that the more we have a clear understanding of our own, like, cultural condition, personality conditioning, and so on, and see how that is biasing a particular moment, the more chance we have to respond intuitively, I think, to the moment, to the situation. But again, that's the theory. That's the way, you know, all like with monks, junior monks who are like training in the monastery, that's what I'm always trying to do. Is I'm trying to get out of the way and hear them first before I offer my suggestions. Because certainly my critical mind will certainly judge them. So, why can't he do this? Or why can't he do that? You know, that part of my personality is very judgmental. And there's a part of my personality which is fearful, you know, that I want people always to like me. And, you know, I kind of know those pretty good now. But that's just part of my conditioning, right? That's the kind of conditioning that I have imbibed through, you know, living on this planet for 67 years. And obviously I'm kind of aware of it, but it still comes up. But if I am aware of it, well, that's just the personality perspective on this. But what is it really like now? What is it? And then there's like really good listening and more chance of me actually giving some kind of a intuitive, reasonable response to the person's need rather than my own fears and desires. So knowing your own personality structures without thinking that you're going to have a perfect personality, forget it. You know, you'll have the whiner in your mind, you'll have the complainer, you'll have the overexcited one, you know, you'll have the depressed one. They all come and go. They're all committee members that come and go. And if you're always trying to get the inspired, beautiful, relevant, harmonious, wise, insightful committee member, you know, you'll go nuts. But you just accept the fact that your personality is conditioned by certain things. And it just does that. You know, wise, but you still don't believe it. Just don't believe it. And you just get to know, oh yeah, there's a complainer. Rather than, oh, I shouldn't complain, I should like everything all the time, I should be grateful. That's an awful way to live, right? That's the kind of idealized idea of, but personality is not self. It's not who you are. You know, it's something that's conditioned through culture, through gender, through family, through, you know, all kinds of things, age or whatever. This is just a kind of conditioned formation. But it certainly interprets life a lot, doesn't it? So knowing that, like the personality structures that come up, like for me, I'm very self-critical, and I'd be critical of others, so that I know pretty well now. We still go there. This is the feeling of being self-critical. Rather than believing in it and just berating myself, or the other, thinking, oh, you're perfect, Viridango. You're just a darling, right? And not being self-critical. You know, I could never do that, actually. So you just say, that's just a thought. That's just a perception that has arisen. There's no reality to it. And then your mind is kind of empty and open. And then it's intuition and the response from the heart, like compassion, those things have a chance to function. So I think that must be the same for raising children, or you know, being with yourself, or being in hospice, or being in a monastery. It must be the same kind of way, you know, we're trying to be with life. But do look at that. Do look at the tendency to take your personality personally. You know what I mean? It's individual, but it's just a formation. It's just an object, right? It's not who you really are. But the awareness of change knows that. That's where the freedom lies. Which is a relief, isn't it? Imagine if you had to be a perfect personality. You know, you'd probably really be depressed when you died. Anything else?
I just have a question. I have people close to me that I see suffering, and I want to tell them sometimes that to be mindful, and I get in that. Well, it really helps me and blah blah. And
right.
Obviously, I can't do it for them, and. And I'm not very good at it myself, but seeing, like, for example, my mother, she's in a lot of pain, and she's always like saying how bad it is, and I try to give her readings on how, you know, it can help her. Anyway, so do you have any suggestions on...
Yeah, you can't proselytize.
Yeah.
That doesn't work.
Yeah.
Or preaching. You know, I think we've all tried that. When I first became a monk, I sent all those awful Buddhist letters to my mother. And I went, oh. Why did I do that? Buddhism is better, right? And I think about that. I was so arrogant. You know, she's a wise woman. She had her own dharma, right? Anyway. So you can only really teach Dharma or offer reflection, not even teach Dharma, offer reflection if there's an opening, obviously. So part of our discipline is that we cannot talk about the Dhamma unless there's an open ear. You know, if someone's disrespectful, is not interested, we cannot, we're not allowed to, which only makes sense. So we can't go knocking on the doors converting all of Glebe into Buddhism. Thank goodness. So I found with my mother, right, that she had her own wisdom, she had her own insights, she lived a full life, and there were areas where she'd get really, really uptight. And I found my most effective thing was not to get uptight. To let her talk about it, you know, to just let her vent, but to try in those very situations where she gets most uptight, not to try to transform her, but to be calm. And to be open and compassionate. The more I did that, the more she would calm down. So for instance, if we had to go, like those last years with her, like I think she got out of the house once or twice a year, out of the condo. She got out to the balcony, and that was usually to the eye doctor. And now, you know, here's a woman that's 95, 94, 93, those ages. Eyesight's bad, hearing's bad. She had a walker, but I took her around in a wheelchair. Going out once a year was like not quite terrifying, but it really got her anxious. Now, for me to say, well, don't be anxious, it's all right. Thanks a lot. Now, the worst thing we'd say to someone who's worrying is, don't worry. You know, so it's cruel, because they are worrying, right? So I found with her, it's just like, really organize the day really, really well. You know, have it all clear, the taxi there on my brother, and, you know, get all my bits and pieces so that I was totally, you know, I had all the kind of choreography down, and then I would just talk to her, you know, and I just kind of, you know, let her express her fears, and I would just talk to her and just change the subject, you know, talk about, you know, like I'd do something like I'd, when Lady Gaga got on the scene, right? Oh, Mama loved this. You know, so I looked up clippings on Lady Gaga. And from my mom, born in 1918. I mean, this is different. This is not her culture. But then I would just bring something totally outrageous to her mind, and it would deflect her. And we talk about Lady Gaga. Monks should be looking at Lady Gaga, but never mind. And, you know, that's what I learned to do, to try to fix her worry didn't help. That didn't help, because we're just worrying about the worry. So I tried to make her comfortable, I tried to listen, and then just, you know, but that was all intuitive. It was intuitive to her needs at the time, rather than my judgments of if she did this, this, and that, then she'd be okay. And I never knew what would happen. I mean, I learned intuitively what worked for her. And so we do these trips she had macular degeneration, and they were actually quite pleasant. She felt really relieved and going, it was quite nice. We were really together, and, you know, they could survive and all of that. So they became, you know, once a year out, it was a huge, huge event. But I know that if I just told her things, it wasn't really coming from the right place. So I always have faith in listening. You know, listening and being with the person and seeing if something from me can come out rather than I can program it. A lot of times when I talk to people about their own practice, I just try to get them to tell me what they're experiencing, and then they're aware. If someone can just talk, you know, we all must know that one, right? If someone can talk about what their experience is about, then they're aware of their experience, and then they're mindful. Simple things like that, and then they're more mindful. Of course, if a person's just indulging in that, then I deflect them. But I think it's all intuitive, isn't it? When the heart has compassion, when you're listening, all those things are in play, I think. And then sometimes you just have to watch people suffer in ways that, you know, you don't have to go there, but they have to go there, and that's very painful. When someone you love is doing something, that's very painful. And then you just stay with your own heart. And this is a feeling of frustration around something. Stay with your own heart. If you stay with your own heart, I have full faith that you'll do the very best you can. But sometimes your own personal power is not up. You know, you don't have the personal power now to actually transform something. It's just, you know, we're limited. Or we don't have the authority, we don't have the personal power, or whatever. And that's just the sadness of life. You know, life is great tragedy, oftentimes, very tragic in that way. And that, you know, include that too, the tragedy. I often think, you know, the kind of, even the miscommunications we have in life, where through the very best intentions, I'll come together with someone, and I'll miscommunicate. And I walk away from thinking, that was tragic. Not in a, you know, not as serious, war and serious sounds, maybe I'm trivializing the word tragic, but it is, you know, life is like that, you know. Your very best intentions, and God, it didn't work again. And you take it personally. Well, if only, and my mother used to say, if a bus had wheels, it would be a bus. If the bus had wheels, I forget how she said that. Anyway, if your grandmother had wheels, it should be a bus. That's what my mother used to say. But I noticed that I, you know, what I want harmony. I want to communicate with people. You know, and oftentimes my very best intentions goes sour. It goes belly up, right? And then, if I take it personally, but my intention wasn't to harm. And so then, when you take this practice, it all belongs, then you come back to the heart. Come back to the heart, and the next time, you just try the best you can. It's very interesting how when we make conscious the suffering of life, there's this kind of beautiful openness of the heart, both in terms of gladness and compassion. When we ignore that, we just keep running to distractions and compensations, which don't really work. This is very mature kind of thing, I reckon. 67, I can talk about maturity now. Right? Must be soon. Okay? Should we finish with the Metta chant?